Okay, this will be your hour now. We're going to take your phone calls as we talk about Bigfoot on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Stephen Streufert. Stephen, we were talking about Bigfoot as possibly being dimensional. You're not in that camp.
Well, you know, whatever spiritual realities may exist, I think that we are flesh and blood creatures here. Biologically, we understand now that humans are apes. We are very closely related to the chimps. And sometimes we are even called the third chimpanzee. So these arguments about dimensional realities, I think there's something internal, you know. Mm-hmm. You can experience these things. You can meditate and go into a timeless, spaceless state of mind. But when the day is done, you know, you have to come back and live in your body. And whatever this Bigfoot creature might be, it is definitely a primate. It's an ape along with us. And the question really is it part of the Homo lineage, you know, along with the hominins like us and our ancestors, or is it a parallel evolution?
That's right.
From an ape, perhaps splitting off before we split with the common ancestor that we share with the chimpanzees. So I think it's interesting to consider these things, you know, but I mean, ultimately you can get lost in that. You can start believing things that you think without evidence, and before you know it, you've constructed a whole system of reality. I know this all too well, running a bookstore, that there's just endless supply of reality systems. And we really need critical thinking to try to get to the bottom of what's really real.
It seems docile. Is that a pretty good assumption?
Well, yeah. I mean, just like I was saying about the gorilla, it's a creature that apparently is capable of great rage, has great strength. It's reported to demonstrate that with bluff charges and howls and roars and smashing of sticks, breaking of branches, throwing of rocks, you know. So these seem to be threat displays. In nature, you know, an animal doesn't want to attack unless it gets some benefit out of that, you know, defending its family or its territory or its social group.
Sure.
Or its,
unless it's on the hunt.
Source.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are reports, you know, like Teddy Roosevelt told that story of the guy who was almost beheaded by a thing that left giant human-like tracks, you know. There are all these cases of missing people in the forests, and some people speculate, you know, that it could be Sasquatch attacking. I've never met somebody who was attacked by a Sasquatch, but I think that those people who were attacked by one would be very unlikely to survive, you know.
Yeah, I would think if they were attacked, their history.
I would imagine so. And, you know, there is, along with these kind of spiritual Native American views, the forest brother, the guardian of the mountain, the boss of the woods, there also is the idea of them being sort of an ogre. Often they were described as devils. Many of the places along the map, you can find these places, Devil Mountain, Devil Ridge, whatever. Those are also areas where there used to be, or perhaps currently still are, many reports of these things living there. The local natives wouldn't even go up into the Bluff Creek Basin, I'm told, because they considered that the domain of these creatures, and it was, you know, dangerous, not just physically, but, you know, you could get cursed. There's sort of a taboo. If you even just saw one, some natives have told me it means you're going to die. This is part of the legend and the lore of the thing. It has a mysterious power that hasn't really been understood, even with the thousands of years of experience that these Native Americans have had.
All right, let's go to a whole bank of phone calls here for us, Stephen. Let's go to Dan driving around somewhere in California. Go ahead, Daniel.
Thank you, George. So you brought up the subject of the missing link. Here's what I think. I think we did all come from apes. Maybe gorillas or monkeys, either way. And I think that the missing link so horrified the advanced version of the humans that the humans killed it because it was a reminder that we did come from the apes. And that might explain why there's no missing link.
You know what? Anything's possible. Dana, when you drive, if you're driving a truck, have you seen anything strange out there?
Well, the strangest thing I ever saw was in a back issue of Time magazine. Stephen King getting John Lennon's last autograph.
Not yep. this again.
Yep. All right, let's go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Gary, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Awesome. Hey, George, it's an honor to speak with you. Listen
Likewise.
To you all the time.
Thank you.
My question is, well, actually, I had a comment. I had a friend of mine that told me that there was an Indian tribe, I don't know if it was the Arapaho or what, that they had captured a breeding pair some time back, and they were holding it. Somehow they escaped. But I kind of wanted to know if Stephen knew anything about that, but I also had a question because he was talking about DNA earlier tonight, and he said that somebody had shot at one. I think it was in the Sierras,
mm-hmm.
and I'd want to know if he could address that.
Sure. We don't know. Was that a real case? Did somebody truly shoot one?
Well, it's yet to be proven, but there's blood on the boots, and they've apparently sent, I know that they've sent a sample that was found from the kill site to the DNA project in Texas, and that passed muster as not being a known animal. So we don't know yet what it is because of the peer review and the secrecy of the journal publishing process, but it's a tall tale. They were driving along hunting for bear, supposedly legally. Perhaps, though, they were taking pot shots out the window. But the fellow claims to have had bear tags, and they saw something come out of the brush waving its arms or whatever. You know, there's been various versions of the story, and he just went into the hunter mode, you know.
Yeah.
And he felt compelled just to shoot.
Where's the body?
Bad guy, you know, a killer. He just shot at it and panicked. And then another one supposedly ran out of the brush. It was a juvenile. And he shot this one, too, in this hunter's blood or whatever. And apparently it died in his arms, and that's where the blood on the boots comes from. They have supposedly what they've been calling Bigfoot steak. Some people speculating in the nature of pounds of this stuff stashed away in the freezers right now. Waiting.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if it's true, though. I mean, there's a lot of telling signs in the story that it may be fake. But, I mean, I know some people handling it. The Olympic Project handled this. Guy Derek Randall is very dedicated and intelligent researcher and I know people who went and investigated on the site, Bobo and others, Jeff Meldrum, the Idaho
good researcher. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, these people, very sensible people, they investigated the story and they believe it. So we're just going to have to wait and see what comes out of this. There's a book being published and so forth, you know.
Yeah.
But it could be true. You learn in the world of Bigfoot not to get your hopes up too much with these things, though.
What about a pair that he was talking about?
The Arapaho story, I've never heard that.
I haven't either.
But there are always these stories of, you know, Bigfoot breeding with humans. And the Hoopa people around here, they say that when this happened, if the resulting infant was alive, they would abandon it out in the woods. And it was perhaps taboo, you know, they didn't want such a thing, cursing the tribe. But apparently these may have gone off and lived with the Sasquatch, adopted by them. So you have a lot of these theories that the Bigfoot is actually a hybrid
right.
between humans and some other proto-human.
That's interesting.
You know, we know from the current discoveries in paleoanthropology that many times in history, there have been multiple forms of hominins living at the same time. You know, we bred with Neanderthals and just recently they said we have some 3% or whatever Neanderthal genes in us. So this is a plausible idea that Bigfoot is some form of human. But, I mean, not literally a human being.
What do you think the population is? A couple thousand?
Yeah. Who knows? I'm inclined to think it's a really rare thing. But there are people, like, right outside of Chicago who report them living there. For them to be widespread across the country into Canada and then various forms of them all across the world. You know, we have the little orang pendak in the Southeast Asian islands, Indonesian islands there. You know, all over the world, the Yowie in Australia, there seem to be these various forms of them, but not necessarily morphologically the same either.
Right.
But perhaps also closely related, that they've evolved in their own unique ways.
All right, let's go to our international line. We've got John out there in Switzerland. Go ahead, John. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for having me on, George.
Sure thing.
And I just have an experience I had in Wisconsin about 35 years ago, if you wanted to hear about it.
Yes, love to.
All right, well, I was watching TV with my family in the living room, and I had a weird feeling come over me and sort of a tunnel vision and sort of a strange sound in my ears. And nobody else in the living room seemed to be affected by it, so I just kind of stood up and walked outside to the front porch. And our house, the back of the house, connects with a long woods that goes up to Interstate 90, and that has a woods that goes all the way up into Canada. So we're at the lower part of the state, and I just walked out the front porch, and I was looking around, and I was feeling kind of weird because I couldn't quite see over to the left side of the house. So I walked over to the porch, looked out there, and then walked back to the front steps, grabbed a pitchfork as I was walking over to that side of the house. I walked around to that side of the house, and there was a little patch of woods. It was all real dark, and I was looking through there, but I couldn't see the neighbors' houses where I would normally see them. It was like a dark patch there. And I kept walking towards the dark patch, walking real close to it. But I had that pitchfork held out in front of me. And about 5 feet away from the edge of this wood, I stopped, and for a second or so, I just stood there about 2 seconds. And all of a sudden, the woods just started moving to my left, and it moved real fast, and brush was gone, and I saw the top of its head, and it was about 9 feet tall, ran through the woods. And then I went out there in the morning, and I looked at the woods, and all the bushes were knocked over them. They weren't run around. They were run through, and they were like a pullback, a 600-pound pullback ran through there.
That's a great story. You're a believer now, aren't you?
Oh, I'm definitely a believer. It wasn't any. It was a two-legged animal. It was 9 feet tall, and it scared the hell out of me.
I had a case in the woods once where I saw a creature that went by so fast, Stephen, I couldn't identify it. It was big. It made a big noise. It seemed like it was moving faster than a bear could, and it just went right through the woods. And, you know, it could have been a human being. I don't know, but it was strange. My son was with me, so he heard the same thing. And that's the closest I've come to something like that.
Yeah,
are we still getting a lot of sightings in your neck of the woods?
I'm sorry, you're talking to me?
Yeah. Are we still getting a lot of sightings
out there? I mean, as I sit here in my shop, to my left, over behind the cabins, the vacation cabins they have over there, there was a report of one coming down and looking into the windows there. That wasn't too long ago. And then right in front of me across the river, there's a little two-lane highway in front here. Down on the river bar, there was a fellow who worked for one of the government agencies, Fish and Game or the Forest Service, and he heard this roar, a howl-like roar, and looked out the front of his tent flap and saw the thing walking, not on four legs, you know, walking bipedally along the river bar. And then this was confirmed. He came up the restaurant here next to my shop the fellow was opening his store, his shop, restaurant, kind of a small restaurant shop for the morning, and he had heard the same sound. And this fellow who was camping down in the river bar came up and came in, you know, his eyes bulging out of his head, and is obviously in a state of extreme excitement. And they confirmed, you know, that that was the same sound. And that's very interesting. All behind my store here on the ridge, including the lady who works in the fire lookout up there, she has found some beds and footprints and had a glimpse of one behind a bush, you know. It was some tall head and shoulders, long hair coming off it, and she didn't think it was a Rastafarian or a pot grower.
Have you heard reports of fireflies being seen around Bigfoot?
You mean kind of like orbs?
Almost like little orbs, yeah, but the fireflies, these little insects.
Well, no, not so much the fireflies, but I have friends who, despite being very rational people, have seen these little lights dancing, and they were supposedly associated with Sasquatch being in the area. I don't know about the bugs.
What about the smell?
Well, the smell, yeah. If this thing is human, you think it learned how to bathe.
Of course, some humans don't even know that, Stephen.
Yeah, it's true. I think a lot of the sightings may indeed be homeless people or crazy people out in the woods. But the smell is very overwhelming. I've heard it described as the worst skunk combined with the worst dead thing, combined with, you know, someone who hadn't bathed in a month and wet their pants and maybe smelled like a slop truck.
If they're more animal than human-like, they probably don't bathe. You know, they probably wouldn't even think about it.
No, maybe just incidentally when they went into the...
Though most animals clean themselves. Cats clean themselves. Dogs will, you know.
Yeah, well, the smell and the shaggy hair and stuff, it does indicate to me that this is a wild creature. Even if it's a human, some form of human ancestral branch, you
right.
know. It does seem to live like a beast, you know. There's very, very few reports of clothing or tool use or fire use or even decent shelters, you know. These claims of stick structures and stuff that are shelters, well, most of them wouldn't even provide any comfort, you know. So maybe this is a lifestyle they choose, you know, one with nature and so forth. But I don't think any intelligent creature would enjoy being that smelly, you know. So
you would think not.
It may just be certain individuals. A lot of people think that it's a smell that's released, like gorillas do, a sort of pheromone-laden smell that is meant to repel potential threats, you know. That may indeed be part of this panic that people experience sometimes when they've seen these creatures.
Well, that's right. Stephen, we're going to come back. We're going to take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And then next hour, we are going to talk about the Beast of Boggy Creek. It's another incredible part of the story here. It's Creature Night on Coast to Coast AM. So we shall be right back. Those of you online, just stay where you are so you don't lose your place. And, of course, as I mentioned, next hour we're going to talk about the Beast of Boggy Creek. Hey, by the way, help us out a little bit. The California Earthquake Authority, KFI AM 640, our LA affiliate, and the American Red Cross, they are joining forces to send an urgent message to get prepared, California, in case there's another disaster. And they're raising some funds that you can help with. Now through April 27th, so only a few more days to go, you can bid on a dinner with me at Morton's in Burbank. That's right. And we'll have a little tour of the KFI studios, and then we'll bring you back here and let you watch some of Coast to Coast for an hour before the car takes you back to Burbank. Anyways, you can bid on that. I'm really close to passing up a few of the guys there on KFI, so take advantage of it. Go to KFI640.com. That's KFIAM640.com. In the search, put Red Cross. Then click auction, and I'm down there at the bottom, and make your bid. So, Stuart, tell me, Stephen, what is new for you when you go out there and do what you do, the bookstore, the blogs, what's next for you?
Well, currently we've been working on what we've been calling the Bluff Creek Film Site Project. And this was just a sort of comprehensive effort to understand the history of the events that have gone on up there from the late 40s until the current day. But I'm specifically regarding the Patterson film. So when I started looking into this in 2001, I had nothing but the sketch map in John Green's pamphlet book from the early 70s. And I went trying to find the film site and just got lost up there in the winding creek. So it took years to try to get a grasp on that. And along the way, went up there in 2007 with some friends from the BFRO, and we found that no one really knew exactly where the film site was, even though Bob Gimlin, who was there with Roger Patterson, that day, had said that he kind of remembered the first sighting spot. We found that there were like five, six, seven, a growing number of theories about where this film site was located. And we had to investigate all of them, up about 6 miles of the creek, going and trying to find those famous big trees that you see in the background of the film. It was quite a saga. You know, we've got 65 or so videos up on YouTube right now, which greatly exceeds like European art house cinema. But we documented the whole process, and we were hoping this could be a demonstration of how to apply a certain research methodology and rigor and to discover real history and real facts in a field that is quite often based upon things that can't be proven, you know. So we actually managed to find this film site last year, and we surveyed the site, did a grid map, and documented all these old artifacts that were actually still there on the ground, you know, on the sandbar, which had not been washed away, as many speculated. It was mostly still there. The whole trackway of the creature is still there. It's now a big overgrown forest of new growth, but the stumps and the log piles from 1964 and the flood and the salvage logging that were done after that, we were actually able to document those and prove, with the help of a geologist friend of ours, using trigonometry and geometry, that this is the true site. So sometime this summer, it's kind of secret, we're going to go back up there with some of the big names in Bigfooting, and we're hoping this will provide some still useful information on the film itself and what size lens was used and how tall the creature was, whether it could have been a hoax, a man in a suit, or just too big to have been such a thing.
All right, back to the phones. Mike is in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
I know this is final phone call, so it's going to be really hard. First of all, the idea of a missing link is based on the idea of the scala naturi, or natural scale or natural ladder in Latin, which is the idea that it's just like a linear progression, but it's actually a branching tree. And modern humans are mostly Homo sapiens, but two other branches have hybridized. It's Homo Denisova and Homo Neanderthalensis, and it's a bit of all of them. And Sasquatch could be some other mixture of those three species. The mitochondrial DNA, according to Ketchum, is sapiens, but she says the nuclear DNA is too, but it might be a distant branch of sapiens. And one of the nuclear genes she's looking at is FOXP2, which is a very ancient gene. It occurs in plants and animals and their common ancestor, and even some bacteria. But how well a creature can speak will be betrayed by the minute details in its version of FOXP2, and that's one of the genes she's examining. Like, we know that Neanderthal had the full range of musicianship and literary skills that most of us have, because they have the full range of the variants of FOXP2 that we have, and possibly Sasquatch have that too, and we'll be able to find that out. And as far as the Patterson-Gimlin film, in 1967, the head of the genetics department here at Cornell explained to me that when she put her foot down in that film, a shock wave goes up her subcutaneous fat, up her leg, all the way up into her buttock. And there's no way, there was no tech to fake that in any way with a monkey suit or anything else. Maybe today they could do it with computer animation, but back then there's just no way that could have been faked.
All right, well, good impression. Stephen, what do you think of that?
Yeah, well, we're just going to have to wait on the DNA. But one of the biggest problems is if it's so close to human, how are we going to discern? And so they're taking a close look at certain areas in the DNA, trying to find out these things that are distinct from human.
And again, there's so many samples. I mean, how many did you say there were?
Well, I don't know how many are in the final test, but over 100 samples were submitted, and they narrowed it down. So they found consistency that these things are all basically the same species of creature. Some form of hominin, you know, not just a hominid, not just an ape, but some form of proto-human or perhaps even closer than we perhaps would feel comfortable with. You know, this. There are reports of this thing speaking and knowing language and so forth. So that's very intriguing.
Do they have an organized plan to announce the results, whatever they may be?
Oh, yeah, like I said before, it's very frustrating because we keep hearing rumors. And we've been, those of us who knew about this thing, I mean, it's been more than 2 years. And we keep hearing very soon, very soon, very soon. And, you know, everyone's rooting for Melba Ketchum, even the people who are kind of critical of some of the things she says. We just hope that this thing will prove something. It may not conclusively say Bigfoot is real, but it will prove that there is some substance to what's been seen by so many, you know, really reliable people. The public media doesn't give you a real solid impression of how real some of this stuff is. You know, you see jokes like the beef jerky ads, and you see these things on television that just sort of make a comedy of it. But the more you look into it, the more you talk to witnesses, the more you read all the books, like I've read some 70 of them, the more you see that there's something going on here. It doesn't seem to all be in someone's mind, like a hallucinatory experience. So we're hoping DNA will put some feet on the ground for that.
All right, let's go to Anthony in Spokane, Washington. Hey, it's your turn, Anthony.
Yeah, I wonder if either of you guys have heard the theory that the sound usually considered to be the scream of Bigfoot might actually be the sound created by the creature's appearance or disappearance. And George, do you still have Art's recording
yes.
of the Bigfoot scream?
He gave it to us, and we'll get it ready for you, and we'll play it.
All right, thanks.
Okay, you got that. Did you ever hear that sound, Stephen? You're going to right now. Here we go. Does that sound real to you, Stephen?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, I've never heard anything quite like that in the woods, and I hear a lot of strange noises in the woods. I don't know. There is a famous recording that was proven to be from some documentary that was a recreation. I'm not sure if that is the one, but I have friends who have heard that. They say that's a pretty authentic sound. But, you know, we heard some owls up by Bluff Creek last year, and they sure did sound like primates. The barred owl is taking over out here and pushing the spotted owl out of its territory, and those things can sound just like monkeys. If you just walked into that camp, you know, and hadn't heard them hooting like ordinary owls at the beginning, you might think, wow, those are Sasquatch out in the hills. But
let's go to Panama City, Florida, first-time caller. It's Summer's turn. Hi, Summer.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to tell you about a story, about an experience that I had some years ago. I was out walking my dogs one evening right before dusk, and one of my dogs let out kind of a low wolf, and I looked up, and I seen not one, not two, but four of what I would say was probably Sasquatch or Bigfoot, and it really startled me. I kind of ran back into the house and locking up all the doors and looking out the windows like I'm crazy, and I was just wanting to know if anybody has ever witness anything like that, you know, like a family of them.
Oh yeah, well that's very common. You know, they're said to live in family groups, and people who have habituations supposedly going on around their rural homes have said the same thing. And I've had people right here in front of me in the store tell me that, you know, this one fellow, when he was fairly young, like 10 or something, he and a whole group of kids who were playing at a potluck barbecue saw a family group come out of the woods. You know, first the male came out, and then it was followed by a smaller one, the female, and then two juveniles. And they just stood there watching the children play for a good long time. So that is a very, very common report. But, you know, mostly what the theory goes, mostly what you're seeing is kind of the rogue individuals who cross the road and may not have a stable territory or a mate or a family group yet.
Next up, AC in Pendleton, Oregon. You're with us. Hi, AC.
Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
Talked to Bob this evening. He had gotten back from an auction, and I had left a message for him to call me because I'd learned about some bison up in Yellowstone that died, and they run an autopsy on them, and their lungs were all full of junk from the cultivar there, which is heating up.
And that, you don't need that.
TV about 4 days ago, so I called, and his wife said she'd have him call, and he called me this evening about 7, and he got back from an auction, and by the way, he is still breaking horses at 79 years old. But he told me of an Indian lady on her way to work, and I didn't catch the town. But the Bigfoot run across the road and run down the railroad tracks, and when I got to a crossing, it stopped, and she could judge by the height of the crossing that it was about between 8 and 9 feet tall. It was a male.
Jeez.
So if he wants more information on it, he still lives in Yakima. I'll give him a call, and he can fill you in on the information.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Always more information out there. Let's go to Rick in Eden, New York on the wild card line. Hi, Rick. Thanks for holding.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I have a question for your guest, Stephen. When there has been a large grouping of sightings in a particular area of the country, and I don't know if this is, this has happened or not, with all the research groups, the Bigfoot research groups that are around, have they ever gone into an area in mass to search the area to try and find the Bigfoot or try and find the evidence? And I'm talking like, say, like 100 people all together going in and searching.
I don't know. Stephen? Stephen, you with us? Stephen's gone.
Oh, dear.
Well,
maybe Bigfoot heard about this.
Maybe Bigfoot grabbed him. Huh? Hold on for a second. We don't know where he is, but we've only got a few minutes to go, so we'll continue taking your calls. Oceanside, California, west of the Rockies. Daniel, welcome to the program. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yes, I heard a story once where a girl was camping out with her family, and they heard a bunch of noises on and saw shadows on a tent, so they looked out, and it was the woman's time of the month, and it attracted a bunch of males, just like at the zoo, monkeys tend to respond to that stuff. Have you ever heard anything like that?
I have not heard of that one at all. Stephen, did you hear any of that conversation?
No, apparently the Illuminati cut me off.
They did. They got you, or I thought Bigfoot grabbed you from your bookstore.
It's likely to happen.
Let's go east.
No, I didn't hear. I just heard the last part about monkeys or something.
He was just talking about some of the various cases and issues out there. Let's go to another caller in Pennsylvania. Dennis, it's your turn. We'll get you in here. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hi, Stephen. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, George. I talked to you like 2 weeks ago. Remember, I was in the Air Force coming out of Alaska, and we saw that UFO.
Yeah, I remember you.
Okay, well, you're going to think I'm crazy, but after that, I went overseas to Okinawa and Cambodia, and my last duty station was KSO Air Force Base up in northern Michigan. It was a Friday night, and actually April, because I got out in May of 77, so it was April of 77. Half of my buddies were downtown. Marquette, Michigan's about 21 miles away from KSO Air Force Base up in northern Michigan. And half my buddies were downtown partying, and my buddy Thomas was going to run me down. We get about 5 miles off the base, and there was a car that was broke down with its four-ways on the right-hand side of the road.
So we slowed down, wound our windows down, talked to the guy. He says he's all right. He's got somebody coming to help him. He says, okay. We started to leave, and the road hooked to the left. We started into the hook, and this Bigfoot ran right across in front of us. We almost hit him. We had to hit the brakes.
What did it look like?
It was at least 7-8 foot tall. It had matted light brown hair, smelled like about 130 dogs all tied together. He looked friendly as hell, but it was nasty. Scared the heck out. We got to town. We started having shots of my buddy. Butch says, what are you guys doing? You look like you're seeing a ghost. And we told him about Bigfoot, and he said we were crazy. I said, no, we weren't.
Now, did you think for a moment maybe there's somebody in a costume?
No, it was too huge, and it was moving too fast.
Yeah.
It just, like, stepped over the guardrails like he was walking over a stick laying in the woods. It was too huge, and he wasn't bulky running. Somebody in a big costume like that would have probably been bulky, but it was unreal.
And anybody in a costume like that risks getting shot at, so I don't. I hope they're not that crazy to do that.
Yeah, and we should have just hit them just to have some evidence with us.
You got that right.
On the car or something.
Steven, we're running out of time here, but these kinds of stories just keep coming in, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Despite, you know, the constant media hype that we get over these ridiculous hoaxed videos, like, you know, that sounded like a real road crossing sighting.
It sure did.
There's these baggy suits running across the road on YouTube every day, practically now. But we've just had an incredibly major footprint find up south of Eugene. If you just drop in London, Oregon, Bigfoot tracks, you'll find it, or go to a Bigfoot lunch club. They found in the mudflats by this lake about 122 castable prints.
That's huge. Stephen, thank you, first of all, for your passion and for investigating a subject that we have covered for way so many years. And I can't wait to get the DNA results. We'll be back in a moment as we talk about the beast from Boggy Creek.